You know, a legendary boxing coach once claimed that physical skill only accounts for like 25% of a champion's success.
Right, which sounds completely backwards to how we usually think about sports.
Exactly. And the other 75%. It's this unyielding psychological system engineered from a brutal, centuries-old Italian dueling culture.
A culture where losing didn't just mean dropping points on a scorecard, you know, it meant dying.
Yeah, it's wild. So today we're pulling back the curtain on how absolute dominance is actually constructed. And to be clear to you listening, we aren't talking about the cheesy motivational poster version of
Oh,
success.
definitely not.
No, we're looking at the uncompromising, almost terrifying mental operating system required to be mathematically safe from your competition.
Yeah, because I think we often prefer the myth of the natural genius. It kind of lets the rest of us off the hook, right?
Oh, 100%.
We just assume people at the absolute top of their field have better genetics or, you know, they caught a lucky break. But when you examine the architects of true, historically undeniable greatness,
You rarely find accidents.
exactly. You find calculated, cold systems.
Okay, let's unpack this, because our deep dive today focuses on the foundational first chapter of a book called Non-Compromised Pendulum.
Written by Dr. Oleg Maltsev and Tom Patti.
Right. And we are looking at the methodology of Castiamato. For those who don't know, he's the legendary coach who built three heavyweight world champions, including Mike Tyson and Floyd Patterson.
But we should emphasize that this isn't just a sports biography.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Dr. Maltsev is a scientist, and Tom Patti actually lived and trained with Cus. So together, they essentially decoded Cus's literal technology for victory.
Yeah, and it's a methodology meant for absolute results in business, in life, high-stakes environments, everything.
But to understand how this extreme mindset functions,
Wow.
we have to trace it back to a very specific cultural crucible, right? Because it wasn't born in a New York boxing gym.
No, it wasn't. The origins trace back to Apulia near Bari in southern Italy, which is where Cus's family originated.
Okay.
And that region, along with Sicily and Calabria, wasn't just a geographical area. It was the historic epicenter of Spanish and Neapolitan fencing.
Wow.
Yeah, the cultural DNA of that region was forged in the reality of the duel. The source material captures the sentiment perfectly. There's this quote, "If I can kill you and you can't kill me, then it would mean that I will control you for life."
Man, that is intense. But, you know, fencing relies heavily on a linear strip, right? Like managing the distance of a blade back and forth.
Right.
I'm curious how that specific rigid geometry translates into a boxing ring, or frankly, like a corporate boardroom where you can be flanked or attacked from multiple angles.
Well, the translation actually lies in the biomechanics of Neapolitan fencing
Yeah,
specifically,
okay. How so?
because they heavily utilize circular movement rather than just stepping back and forth on a straight
Oh,
line.
interesting.
Yeah, Neapolitan masters taught that you never meet force with opposing force head on. Instead, you step off the center line. You pivot into your opponent's blind spot.
So you're constantly changing the angle.
Exactly. By changing the geometry of the engagement, you create a structural advantage.
And in a business context, I mean, this means refusing to engage a larger competitor on their own terms.
Right. You shift the market angle.
You force them to pivot to face you, and in the time it takes them to reorganize, you strike. So it's all about structural superiority, not just, you know, hitting harder or spending more money.
Precisely.
So it's about holding the positional advantage that dictates the entire board. And Cus learned the absolute necessity of that control in a deeply brutal, personal way on the streets.
The street fight story.
Yeah, the text details this fight he got into as a young man, and it's just a terrifying scenario. Cus is in this brawl, and he actually has his opponent dead to rights.
He's achieved that structural dominance we just talked about.
Exactly. He could have ended it permanently right there. But his friends are standing around watching, and they start screaming at him, "Don't kill him, Cus! Don't do it!"
Yeah, the pressure of social conformity in a literal life or death moment.
Right. And the crazy thing is, Cus listens to them.
He
He
does.
shows mercy. He dials back his advantage because he lets the voices of others override his own instinct.
And the cost of that mercy was immediate.
Yeah, the opponent used that split-second hesitation, turned the tables, and nearly killed Cus. Like he permanently blinded Cus in one eye.
What's fascinating here is the psychological conclusion he drew from that permanent physical trauma.
Because most people would just say, like, street fights are bad, I should avoid them.
Right. A conventional thinker might conclude that fights are simply too unpredictable. But Cus took away a far more radical lesson. He decided that listening to others is akin to death.
He literally internalized that his friend's good intentions cost him his vision.
The realization was absolute. He decided in that moment that relying on the advice or the pleas or the social preferences of anyone else, even his closest friends or family, was a fatal vulnerability. He resolved to rely entirely on his own uncompromised judgment from then on.
Wow.
Yeah, if his judgment was flawed, he'd suffer the consequences alone. But he would never again outsource his survival to the opinions of a crowd.
That absolute paranoia, that refusal to ever be caught relying on someone else's terms, I mean, that's the direct catalyst for his ultimate doctrine.
Yes, it is.
He created this core rule: hit your enemy from an absolutely impregnable position.
Because he realized he could never afford to be caught in a vulnerable, defensive posture ever again.
Right, so he just fused offense and defense into one unified action.
Exactly. The traditional paradigm in combat, and frankly in most corporate strategies, treats offense and defense as separate phases.
Like, you launch a marketing campaign, that's your attack.
Right, then you retreat, you assess the budget, and you defend your market share. You punch, then you block. But Cus erased that binary entirely.
Offense equals defense.
Yes.
But how does a person achieve that mathematical safety practically? Like, you're standing right in front of someone trying to take your head off, or you're launching a product against a tech giant with endless capital.
Well, you achieve it through that geometry we discussed earlier.
The stepping off the center line.
Exactly. You engineer your physical or market position so that the very act of your strike inherently shields you.
Okay, nice.
You move your head off the line of fire as you throw the punch. In business, you launch your disruptive product in a regulatory gray area or maybe a niche demographic.
Where the massive competitor physically cannot mobilize their resources to hit you back without damaging their own core brand.
Precisely. At the exact moment you are inflicting maximum damage, it is mechanically impossible for them to return fire.
But executing that requires nerves of absolute steel. I mean, you're asking a human being to override their natural flinch response.
Yeah.
To stand in the fire and trust a geometric system over their own adrenaline and fear.
Which is incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Which brings us to how you actually build someone capable of doing that. And the source outlines a very specific architecture, the fighting machine.
Because you cannot simply instruct a normal, socially adjusted person to execute the system. It goes against every instinct.
So you have to actively construct the fighting machine.
Right. And the source material provides the explicit formula for this. The fighting machine equals psychology plus philosophy plus skills.
And the weighting of that formula is what's so jarring.
Yeah, the 75-25 split.
Yeah. Coase dictated that building a champion is 75% psychological and philosophical. Only 25% relies on physical skills.
Which is a huge paradigm shift.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, I have to push back on this a bit for the sake of our listeners. If you're a neurosurgeon or you're a senior developer writing code for like a rocket guidance system.
Okay, I see where you're going.
You cannot tell me that 75% of your success is just having a killer mindset.
Yeah.
In highly technical fields, the skill has to be the dominant factor, right? You can't just believe your way through a craniotomy.
No, of course not. The technical skill is non-negotiable, yes.
Right.
You absolutely must possess the 25%.
Good.
But consider what happens during a catastrophic complication in that operating room, or when that startup's funding is pulled 48 hours before launch.
Panic sets in.
Exactly. We have all seen brilliant coders freeze under pressure. We have seen technically flawless executives make disastrous, panic-driven decisions when the market turns.
I see.
The 75% is what allows the 25% to actually function under existential threat.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the text gives a visceral example of what it looks like when that 75% evaporates.
The story with the stool.
Yeah. There's a story of one of Cus's fighters in a grueling, punishing match. The bell rings. He comes back to his corner, collapses onto the stool, and essentially begs Cus to throw in the towel.
He's just completely broken.
Right. He says he is done. He can't go back out there. But Cus refuses.
Mm.
He looks down at this exhausted fighter and says, "None of my boys give up on a stool in a corner of the ring. Never. Either get dropped by the knockout or win the fight right now."
The sheer willpower required from the coach in that moment is staggering. He's forcing the fighter to confront his own internal collapse.
Right, because the fighter sitting on that stool hadn't suffered amnesia. His muscles still knew how to throw a hook. His cardiovascular system was still pumping blood.
The 25%, the physical skill was entirely intact.
Exactly.
What fractured was the 75%. The psychology broke. The philosophy that justified his suffering just crumbled.
Wow.
And the moment that mental foundation cracked, the entire fighting machine shut down, rendering the physical skills completely useless.
Because to Cus, getting knocked out was acceptable.
Yeah, that's just a mechanical failure.
Right. If you go out there executing the impregnable system and someone catches you with a freak shot, that's just physics. But quitting on the stool meant your internal software was corrupted. It meant you failed the system.
And the consequence of that goes even deeper for anyone listening, because you can hold the most prestigious degree, you know, possess the best resume, have the most innovative product on the market.
But if you quit on the stool.
Exactly. If your mindset collapses the moment a competitor threatens your position, your technical skills cannot save you.
Which introduces a massive practical problem.
How to live with it.
Right.
Yeah.
If 75% of success requires this uncompromising, borderline ruthless commitment to the system, how do you sustain that?
You can't.
Like, you can't walk around the grocery store or attend a PTA meeting operating like a gladiator out for blood. It's totally socially incompatible.
It is a quick path to isolation or, frankly, prison. Cus understood that a human being cannot run hot at all times. The fighting machine state is too destructive and too exhausting to leave running in the background.
So what did he do?
He instituted a highly practical mechanism for mind control, the doctrine of paired push buttons.
The green button and the red button.
Exactly. Within every person, Cus identified these two distinct operational states.
Okay, lay them out for us.
So the green button is the sympathetic, compassionate, ordinary human. This is the state that allows you to love your family, enjoy a meal, and cooperate with society.
Normal life.
Normal life. The red button, however, is the fighting machine. It is devoid of empathy, entirely calculating, and focused solely on execution and victory.
The origin of this concept is wild to me.
Tennis player.
Yeah. He didn't pull this from ancient Spartan texts or military manuals. He borrowed it from the autobiography of a Wimbledon tennis champion.
Which is such an unexpected source for boxing psychology.
It really is. This tennis player described a peak state he would reach during a brutal five-set match where he literally ceased to feel human.
The fatigue vanished.
Yeah, the doubt disappeared, and any empathy for the opponent across the net just evaporated. He became this industrialized flow state, a machine designed exclusively to win points.
And Cus realized that waiting for that state to naturally occur was a strategic flaw.
Oh, because you can't rely on it just happening.
Exactly. It couldn't be an accidental flow state. It had to be a commanded state. He actively trained his fighters to locate these psychological buttons and manually operate them.
I picture it like a physical switch located right at the door of a boardroom or just off stage before a massive keynote presentation.
That's a perfect way to visualize it.
Right. Cus instructed his fighters that the exact moment their skin touched the ring ropes, they had to mentally and almost physically imagine turning off the green button and engaging the red.
Because in that squared circle, human sympathy was a liability. Hesitation was a liability.
Right. But the doctrine requires absolute discipline on the exit as well, doesn't it?
Oh, arguably more discipline. The moment the bout ends and they step back through those ropes, they must instantly disengage the red button and switch the green back on.
Because if you don't...
If you carry the red button into your home, you destroy your life. It is a specialized, lethal tool designed for a highly specific environment.
So what does this all mean when we combine the 7525 formula with the concept of these push buttons?
Well, the source material uses a brilliant mechanical analogy that crystallizes everything we've talked about.
The gun analogy.
Yes. It maps the human mind directly to a firearm.
And it maps perfectly.
The mapping is incredibly precise. If you view the individual as a weapon, the green button, your everyday psychology, your desire for comfort and social harmony, acts as the safety lock.
Okay, so it prevents accidental discharge.
Exactly. It keeps you safe.
You definitely want the safety on when the gun is just resting in the holster.
Absolutely. Now, when you transition to the environment of conflict, you must press the red button. Taking off the safety is the shift in psychology.
But just taking the safety off doesn't fire the gun.
No, it doesn't. And that's where philosophy comes in. Philosophy is the act of racking the slide. It is cocking the hammer. It is the internal belief system that loads the chamber and provides the absolute moral justification for the strike you are about to make.
And the 25%. The physical skills.
The coding ability, the public speaking, the footwork, the jab. That is simply the mechanical act of pulling the trigger.
Let's really look at this for a second, because this is the trap I think so many of us fall into.
How do you know?
If you are trying to advance your career right now, you are probably spending 90% of your time polishing the trigger.
Yes.
You know, you're taking online certifications, you're reading technical manuals, you're refining your pitch deck, you're obsessing over the mechanics of the trigger finger.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the tragic reality for many professionals is that they possess the lightest, most finely tuned trigger in their industry. But their internal safety lock, their green button psychology, is permanently glued to the on position.
Because they're afraid.
Yes. They are too afraid of offending a colleague or too worried about failing publicly to ever disengage the safety.
So you can pull that finely polished trigger all day long and the weapon will never fire.
Exactly. Or even worse, let's say they manage to take the safety off, but their philosophy is hollow.
Oh, like they don't genuinely believe they deserve the promotion?
Right. They feel a sense of imposter syndrome, or they feel bad for the competitor they are trying to unseat.
So they haven't cocked the hammer.
The chamber is completely empty. They pull the trigger, and all they get is a click.
Wow.
The trigger is useless without the psychological permission to fire and the philosophical mechanism that loads the action. This is exactly why Cuss insisted you cannot just jog and hit heavy bags to become a champion.
Physical preparation does absolutely nothing to fix a jammed psychological weapon. It makes perfect sense why this entire methodology is called non-compromised. Cuss D'Amato wasn't just teaching athletes how to punch. He was engineering bulletproof, impregnable mentalities.
Yes, he was.
If we synthesize this entire first chapter into a doctrine you can apply to your life right now, it is this. Be impregnable for everybody and work on your own achievements.
It's about structural safety.
Right. You must build a system where you are structurally, mathematically safe from the competition. You learn exactly where your safety switch is. You turn it off when it is time to execute, and you absolutely refuse to allow anyone to interfere with your business.
Which forces us to confront the very nature of how we pursue those achievements.
Yeah. And this leads us to our final thought.
Right, because there is a concept introduced in Chapter 2 of the source material that radically challenges everything modern culture teaches us about ambition.
It's called the deadlock model.
Yes.
And this part completely upends the traditional self-help advice about setting goals.
It dismantles it entirely. Society constantly tells us that identifying what you want is the ultimate expression of freedom. You know, it's the first step to success.
Like, I want to be a CEO. I want to launch this company.
Exactly. We treat desire as the engine of achievement. But Cuss's methodology dictates that the exact opposite is true.
Which sounds crazy at first.
But it makes sense when you break it down. The moment you declare, I want, you automatically and instantly generate 4 massive psychological obstacles.
I want equals fear, plus emotion, plus pain, plus anxiety.
Those 4 elements are the immediate byproducts of desire.
Because if you want something, you're afraid of not getting it.
Right. And a mind clouded by fear, emotion, pain, and anxiety is fundamentally destabilized. It is a mind that cannot effectively operate the red button and certainly cannot maintain an impregnable position.
So before we go, consider this. If simply wanting success guarantees psychological failure, how do you achieve greatness without ever actually desiring it?
It's a heavy question.
It is. Take a hard look at your own goals today. Is your ambition actually your greatest vulnerability? Are you caught in the deadlock of hoping for a result rather than loading the philosophy, taking off the safety, and pulling the trigger?
Something to really think about.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. As you navigate your own high-stakes environments, ask yourself, where are your push buttons located? And when the pressure is absolute, do you know how to switch them?